I am Plante on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Chris Shaw joins me again. He is a degrowth Vancouver candidate for City Council. We'll talk to him about the reasons why he's running, the issues surrounding this campaign, about degrowth Vancouver and more. Dr. Christopher Shaw is a neuroscience researcher at the University of British Columbia and the author of Five Ring Circus, Myths and Realities of the Olympic Games, which he was on with back in 2008. The website for Degrowth Vancouver is at d-growth.com. Please welcome back to the Plante Online program, Chris Shaw. Good morning, Dr. Shaw.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, about Degrowth Vancouver and how this came about, I understand it had its roots in the Work Less Party?
Well, it definitely has its roots in the Work Less Party. It was many of the things we were saying back in 2005 and 2008 about the need to control growth and basically do less work of the kind that increases our ecological footprint is really implicit for what we're saying now. And all we've done really is change the name of the Civic Party to demonstrably show that we are very concerned about the limits to growth and make it very, very clear that it's not a sidebar issue. It's a very central issue to our campaign.
And none of the other parties reflect the views that you guys espouse?
None that I've seen. I mean, certainly most parties. Now, I've been on a number of debates with the other parties during the civic election. And it's interesting that everyone is talking about being green. Everyone's talking about being sustainable. It's not just the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're all talking about growth as if it's this endless cycle that we're on and that we can't change. And so they're talking about green growth or sustainable growth or things that we frankly consider oxymorons, that you cannot grow forever and consider it green. At some point, your ecological footprint is going to expand, and no matter how much you finesse it and recycle and do things like that, which are all valuable things to do, don't get me wrong, but at some point, if you're locked into a growth strategy, you're going to endlessly impact the rest of the world. And when everyone around the world is endlessly impacting the rest of the world, you know, you're going to reach those limits faster. We live in a finite space, and it looks still pretty wide open at this point, but it's looking less wide open than it did a generation ago. And certainly, by the time our children are in the positions that we're in now, it's going to look a lot less feasible for them to continue to grow endlessly.
Now, you've been in political life, running as a candidate for, I guess, since 2005, right?
No, I originally ran in 2000 for a federal party called the Canadian Action Party, and then worked with the Greens for a while, for a number of years as in policy and media, the provincial Greens, and then moved over to degrowth only in really 2006-07 and was active in the campaign in 2008.
So I graduated high school in 2000, so really I tend to think that I've been politically conscious since then.
Right.
In terms of how we've grown as a city, are we seeing some of the things that you're warning us about now that have come about in the last 11 years?
Well, I think we certainly have, and I think what's been very, very obvious is that the Olympic misadventure that I've written about and you referred to in your opening, was really a real estate ploy, and it usually is a real estate ploy in any city that hosts the Games. It's basically a means to take taxpayer dollars. It's the ultimate P3. It takes taxpayer dollars to drive the real estate market ever higher with these mega projects and the spill-off projects that happen with real estate development, where the realtors of the town, in our case Jack Poole and David Podmore and that ilk, basically saw the opportunity. And in fact, Jack Poole said so back in 2002. They see the opportunity to hyper-stimulate the local market with foreign investment, with local local developments of a massive scale, and the Athletes Village again being one of many cases in point. And so this is really what it's all about. And so the Olympic adventure has led to, I think, what a lot of people are feeling: rents and housing prices for many people are out of control in the city. It's reached the point where a lot of people who are not wealthy really can't afford to live here anymore. So you what you see is kind of an outflow of people into the suburbs where prices are cheaper. And many people who are young are having a great deal of difficulty finding places to live in the city. Many people who are older are having trouble finding affordable places. And it's in large measure, I think, driven by that whole Olympic boom, which is exactly the purpose of it in the first place. I mean, it wasn't done blindly. It was very deliberate.
So how
on the part of the developers.
So how do you, as a city councillor, if elected on Saturday, one city councillor at that, an independent one. How do you make Vancouver more affordable?
Well, I think there are actually quite a large number of measures one can take, and then these include very stringent rent controls. And then, you know, the idea of rent controls is certainly not alien to different cities. New York has rent controls, but I would make them extremely stringent. I would also make it possible for the city council to take a much more active and extremely, I would say, even activist role in deciding which projects go forward. And one, there are several ways to do that. One, they could simply not zone, you know, do the spot rezoning that allows developers to move in on something like Little Mountain and massively develop something there that was, you know, really not, in, I think, in the community interest. The second way is you can do various kinds of tax issues where you basically prevent them from doing it by making it so onerous to do it that they simply don't want to develop those kinds of projects. But I think the primary way really goes to the second core principle of Degrowth Vancouver, and it was one of the principles of Work Less Party, and still is, of course, that community-based democracy. And again, you hear lots of, the same way you hear this kind of greenwash coming from the other parties, all the other parties will say they believe in neighborhood democracy. But neighborhood democracy, in our view, is not just consultation where then the ruling party does whatever they like. It is actually choices are made at the neighborhood level. So degrowth would be best accomplished by that because people would choose, they could choose to have giant condos built in the, right in the smack in the middle of the neighborhood, or they could choose not to. And if they chose not to, that wish would be respected. And I think those sorts of choices made across the city in all the 28 such communities across Vancouver would basically limit the opportunities of the developers to simply come in and bulldoze and change the nature of neighborhoods. It would have made it impossible for them to do what they're doing in Little Mountain, for example. It would make it impossible for them to do the massive development that's planned along the Cambie Corridor, which, of course, the Cambie Corridor was the site of the RAV line simply because the people that were a lot smarter than the rest of us realized that, that is, the developers knew that this would be a hyper-driven real estate market after the Olympics.
And in neighborhood democracy, does that lead us towards, say?
Not necessarily. I mean, there are both positive and negative things to think about with wards. But one of the things is wards don't necessarily guarantee that things are more democratic, nor do they guarantee they can be less corrupt. It's not the same as campaign finance reform, where you're limiting where the financial contributions come from. Wards also tend to balkanize a city. And if you're going to have a city that is going to be one city, then you really can't balkanize it. You can have respect for communities and community decision making, but I don't think a ward really serves that purpose. A ward is an electoral device that doesn't really accomplish the kind of democratic change in governance that we're talking about. We're really talking about a bottom up process where the people themselves in those districts, however they're defined, make the choices. And it works its way up to city council. And the job of city council and the mayor is to adjudicate and adjust and facilitate the choices the neighborhoods make and step in when there's conflicts between neighborhoods, not to dictate top-down. So it's a very different view of what democracy actually looks like.
And how has, this council done?
Horribly.
Yeah.
It's ghastly. I mean, they are arguably the Visionista regime is arguably worse than the NPA.
Yeah.
And you had the examples in the West End where they called people who actually were Vision supporters, believe it or not,
yeah,
they called them effing hacks.
Yeah.
And the derisive and just the nasty nature of anything that disagrees with their agenda is overwhelming. And then, of course, they foist these projects on communities that didn't want them. And if they listen to you without making snide remarks, then they're going to do it anyway. So people voted for Vision thinking they were going to get difference, and they got NPA. And I think a lot of people in this election are looking at it and think, why should I bother? You know, only 31% voted last time. Why should I bother to vote when it doesn't matter if I vote for NPA, I get NPA, and if I vote for Vision, I get NPA. So, you know, they're both developer parties. Just look at their financing post at City Hall. And you don't have a choice, and that's why independents are so crucial in this election, because independents allow people to actually think there's a reason to get up and vote.
And
just because there may be a chance that some of these independents would actually bring the scrutiny and put the brakes on some of these otherwise uncontrolled developments. Because if you don't get independents on council, it's not going to happen. It's simply not. The Visionistas are going to vote as a block. They will vote in lockstep with whatever NPAers get in, and you're basically going to have the same sort of governance we've had really since before the Olympics, and it'll carry on that way. And we'll have an endlessly growing, hyper-developed city in the hands of the developers.
And independents seem to be getting the attention that they hadn't gotten heretofore, right?
I think so. I think there is a growing sense, even amongst people who have been traditional Vision supporters, or even traditional NPA supporters, that there's something not right. It's like that. I think there are a couple things that have led to it. One is, I think, a growing sense worldwide, and we also feel this thing that, you know, the old Madeleine, if you remember the series or the movie and the book, where Miss Clavel suddenly looks up and says something is not right, and I think a lot of people innately know something is not right, and what that something is open to debate, but that's the origin really of the Occupy Wall Street and now the Occupy Vancouver and other Occupy movements. People know something is not right. They want to do something about it. How do you do that? And so that's the beginning of the debate, and that's where I think we're on a continuation of a larger debate, and that's why I think this election is having a lot of people look more to independent candidates of various parties who are actually talking about those same sorts of things. The other thing is just the nature of what's happened over the last 3 years. People saw Vision come into power, basically blaming the NPA for the Athletes' Village, and then Vision has done nothing besides lie and hide the details about what actually went on, and also basically disregarded the fact that they had Vision counselors sitting in the room and voting in lockstep with the NPA about the loans to Millennium. So I think a lot of people have finally fed up with it, and it's not just the young people anymore. It's people across the age spectrum and really across the class spectrum. People are just really fed up with what's going on. Whether they're going to show up and vote next Saturday is another question.
What is the weather like on Saturday? Do you know?
Hang on. Let me Google it for you.
Yeah. In terms of the Occupy Vancouver, how often are you down there?
I am down there usually some part of every day.
Yeah.
I do medic shifts with whoever, you know, when there are gaps and when I can, and also I tend to... I'm one of the medic coordinators for the site.
Yeah. How have the mayor, Mr. Robertson, and his group, and Suzanne Anton in her role as, I guess, the opposition, how have they handled what's gone on there at front of the art gallery?
Okay, well, first a weather report.
Yeah,
it's going to be sunny on Saturday, so let's hope a lot of people come out and vote.
Indeed.
I think it's hard to... Okay, Suzanne Anton has at least shown up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she would like to send in the riot squad, or certainly some of her comments suggest she would. She certainly doesn't like it being there, and for her, it's a really an embarrassment, and she would rather it was just gone. But at least give her some credit; she's actually shown up. I haven't seen Greg Robertson there except the day when the young woman died, and he showed up not at the Vision site exactly, but around Occupy site, but around the corner. And he had a little press conference, and he basically proceeded to mislead the public and the media about what had actually happened. And I found that one of the more shocking bits of political theater I'd ever seen. I found it hypocritical and disingenuous in the extreme. I mean, he surely had to know that the events as he reported were not what had actually happened. And he nevertheless blamed the Occupy Vancouver event for the woman's death, which was really unfortunate. And, you know, the last time Gregor showed up in an alleyway where someone is overdosed, I can't remember when that might have been, but I don't think he's ever done that. And to all of a sudden to be playing politics with the death of a human being was really, really, really disgusting, frankly. And I came away from it feeling very sick of it, that any politician would stoop so low. So I think they've both mishandled it. I think Vision feels threatened by Anton and the NPA on the issue. They feel like they have to be tough, and at the same time, they're just not telling the truth. If they really wanted to make it safer, they would be offering city services to help the medics be more active and provide more services. They would be doing a lot more things than they've done, and all they've done so far is basically say that they believe in democracy, but they want it moved. And then basically lie about the events down there.
And then, do you think it'll be the encampment will still be there after Saturday?
Well, it's hard to say. Obviously, I think it will. And certainly, my sense of it is that, you know, the medics and the other people working there are still strong. It's, you know, it's cold outside, but people are their spirits are good. A lot of the people who came forward there, you know, now over 4 weeks ago now. Are still feeling that they haven't finished addressing the issues that need to be addressed, and I think we've also drawn a number of people who are homeless who are in the site because they're actually safer. They have food, they have basic medical, they have relative safety compared to where they would be otherwise. And I think I don't think anyone of all those groups is planning to go home yet. So it's really a function of whether after the election, whichever government comes to power is going to take an action and turn Jim Chu loose with his riot stick. I hope none of them do, but honestly, I wouldn't put it past them.
Now, the name of your party is Degrowth Vancouver, yes. So one would assume then, just seeing it at face value, that you'd be against every development that came forward at council. Is
no,
that
not true, of course. I mean, people need a place to live, and we do need to build more affordable housing and more social housing and do more to get the homeless people off the streets and to find ways to accommodate the fact that the people that do live here. And the question is, how do we do that? Do we do it by tearing down Little Mountain and throwing up giant condo towers that are mostly sold to rich people, or do we do it in a different way? So it's not that there will be no development in terms of building more stuff, and it's not that you won't accommodate the people who live here. You just don't fuel the endless real estate market. You don't accept, for example, the notion that the city has to grow X percent per year. And you find ways to limit that growth, whatever those ways may be. So really what we're talking about is more talking, really, at this stage. You know, having the conversation, what are the tools in the toolbox? What can we do to limit growth? And we know we have to. So how do we do that? How do we do that in a rational way now that we still have choices to make? It's a little bit like an analogy of jumping out of an airplane at 10,000 feet. You know, at first everything looks wonderful, and then sooner or later the ground is coming up. What are you going to do about that? Well, if you're smart, you deploy a parachute before you hit the ground. And what we're saying is we need to deploy that parachute where we're starting to have that rational discussion about the limits of growth and what that looks like, what we can do to limit growth, so that we don't finally have to make choices that are right now look pretty daunting and pretty impossible. Have those choices made now so that we start that process rather than passing the buck to our kids or our grandkids when their choices are going to be a lot more limited.
Something that I've seen proposed, and this usually comes from sort of the right, is limiting foreigner ownership of property in the city.
Yep.
Is that something that you're also thinking about?
It is. So for example, some of the things we're talking about, and obviously rent controls, limiting foreign ownership for sure. They do in various cities and various countries. One of the independent candidates has talked a lot about that, and certainly she's at least in part right that has driven the market since Expo.
Yeah.
That's certainly true. We have actually taken another page from some of the things that have happened in some cities in Western Europe, which is basically unoccupied apartments are legal squat sites. And you know, there's a process, for example, in the Netherlands where if a place is unoccupied and it's just basically there as a real estate speculation tool, it can be occupied. And we would favor something like that. We would look at all the range of options that are on the table, and we would make it very, very hard for the developers such as, well, name any of them, to go put up these giant towers. I mean, you know something's wrong at Little Mountain when even a usually fairly tame opponent of massive development like Jim Green bailed out of that project. Mm-hmm. So something's clearly wrong there. And what they're building, of course, is, you know, you have 15 acres that could be a lot of mixed housing and a lot of that social housing, and it could also be, you know, it could lead to the kind of thing that we're talking about as the third pillar of our platform, which is really sustainability. How would you do that? Well, you would put in farm and gardens and things like that there, that where people could start to actively grow their own food. Because ultimately, part of what we're doing for a sustainable future is going to have to involve becoming food self-sufficient. Most of our food in Vancouver comes from outside of Vancouver. Contrast that with Hong Kong, which is a much bigger city, where 70% of their food, approximately, is grown within their boundaries. Mm-hmm. They are more food sufficient and self-sufficient in many ways than we are. So if a disaster were to strike Hong Kong, they would be in better shape than we are. That seems paradoxical, but it's nevertheless true. We are not very secure in terms of those things.
How do you think the election will go on Sunday, Saturday? I mean, what sort of council will we have on, I guess, Sunday morning?
Well, you want my wish list or my
your crystal ball?
My crystal ball. It really depends on how many people show up. So if the last election, 31% showed up.
Yeah.
And, of course, the conventional wisdom is, well, that means the other 69% are just lazy, which I don't believe at all. I think the other 69% in that election decided it wasn't worth getting up and going to vote because you're going to get the same thing. And they were right. So what I hope is that there are enough independents from Degrowth and from the group called Lauren Gill and Aaron Spires and some of the other independents that might actually encourage people, especially young people, to get out and vote because maybe they could actually put someone on council. If it stays with the 31% who traditionally vote, I'm guessing you'll probably get an NPA vision split. I think the NPA is coming back. I don't think I don't know how far back they're going to come, but I think they'll certainly do better than having one councillor. But in my dreams, I would like to see some independent voices. I'd like to see Tim Lewis on council. Obviously, I'd like to see one of our degrowth candidates. I'd like to see something like Lauren Gill or Aaron. I think that would make a very big difference in how this city evolves over the next 3 years.
These are interesting times. Chris, I appreciate your time today, and good luck with the rest of the campaign.
Thank you. My pleasure.
The website for more, degrowth.com. That's d-growth.com. Chris Shaw, he is a degrowth Vancouver candidate for city council on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunder.